Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet. Thank you, Prem, and thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, I hope you are enjoying our discourse special series, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. And now, welcome to this last leg of Thursday live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. Today is May 2nd, 2013. The month of May has begun. And yes, the temperature in Prashantinilayam is on the higher side. Every day it hovers above 40 degrees Celsius. Today it was 42 during daytime. But fortunately, there is no problem with power or water, at least inside the ashram, just how it has been always in Prashantinilayam. And so it has not been difficult to sail through the summer heat in Prashantinilayam. And the most moving thing about the ashram now, if you take a stroll inside the premises, is this. At least this is what touched me. You find most of the volunteers working inside the ashram, that is the sevadals. All the sevadal work is being done by young adults and teenagers. Yes, a lot of college going students and young graduates are here in the ashram donning the sevadal scarf and badge to do service. I asked some of them from the states of Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu, why did they choose to come to Prashanti to do service? It is their vacation time. Isn't this boring? Is it not difficult serving in the hot climate of summer months? I mean, is this the way you would want to spend your vacation? And let me tell you this, almost all of them, they just simply smiled, you know, almost looking at me, saying, you know, why am I even asking them this question? They just smile and say, no, we like it. We like being here. We are happy to serve in Prashantinilayam, in Baba's ashram. And some would then go on to share how they long to study in Baba's school or college, and some others would go on to share how they are planning to apply to the university next year, and the third would narrate how he is going to write the entrance the second time in the coming year. Doesn't matter if he could not get through this time. And seeing all these youth so inspired to spend their vacation, spend their time doing only selfless service, where 99% of their classmates would be spending their vacation entertaining themselves in some other way. You know, this spirit of selflessness in young minds, this is what touched me and continues to overwhelm me every day as I walk in the lanes and by lanes of Prashanti in this summer. Other day, in fact, I met a youngster from New Zealand. He's so keen to join Baba's college to study MBA. And I asked him, why here when you can do management anywhere else? He said, what I will get here, I will not get anywhere else. I know for sure, once I get in here, I will be a different person. It will be a transforming experience. It is really overpowering to see how students from far off places and even countries who have people who have resources and opportunity to pursue their higher education in any other reputed university, striving for a chance to get through the system here and study in Baba's college. And so, dear listeners, even though the climate is hot in Prashanti, you know, talking to any of these hundreds of students who are here either to write their entrance test or who have chosen to serve as sevadals in various points inside the ashram, all these conversations simply take away all the tiring of the summer. They just soothe your soul. Their words just warm your heart. You cannot but pause for a moment and reflect what profound impact Swami has had in their lives, in these young minds, in these impressionable hearts. And when I come to think of it, how much Swami has painstakingly strived for decades and decades together to inculcate these higher ideals and noble ideas in youngsters, especially college-going teenagers, an age group which nobody generally wants to touch. And as I ruminate on this, you know, my mind goes back to this last few years of Bhagwan's earthly sojourn, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, how Swami always returned to Prashantinilayam in this month of May. It doesn't matter wherever he was, be it Kodaikanal or Bangalore. Yes, it was hot, but Swami would be in Prashantinilayam in the first week of May because a very important occasion awaited him. It almost beckoned him, it drew him to Parthi. And Baba was very busy during this period making arrangements for this sacred occasion in spite of his physical discomforts. It was an occasion when Swami was fully involved in its every detail of the function. A day when hundreds of poor and needy were served food and clothes. The day when mandatorily Baba paid a visit to the samadhi of his earthly mother. The day dedicated to the remembrance of this incredible soul. The day marked was spent in adoration of that divine soul whom the Lord had picked out of millions of souls to enact the role of mothering the infinite one when he came down in human form. A day to ruminate on the great sacrifices and the trauma, the trials and the tests, the agonies, as well as the ecstasies that the Divine Mother went through. And in the process, shone like a resplendent pole star, providing light and solace, warmth and comfort, inspiration and strength to thousands of spiritual aspirants till this day. And it goes on. When you come to think of it in retrospect, few women have influenced the destiny of this planet as silently and as significantly as this great mother did. In fact, Baba has often mentioned how no one can fathom the relationship that exists between him and the Divine Mother. Even after her passing on May 6, 1972, Baba said, "She might have given up her body, but she is always with me. Ishwarama is the chosen one. I resolved on my birth and I chose her to be my mother." That is the intimate relationship that exists between Ishwarama and myself. On one occasion, Baba even went on to say, "It is because Kausalya bore him in the womb that Rama shone forth as God. It is because Putlibai fostered him that Gandhiji became famous as Mahatma." And then Swami added, "It is because the chaste Ishwarama brought Satya up. It is because of her love and affection that Satya Narayana," Baba's childhood name, "it is because of her love and affection that Satya Narayana earned universal adoration and love." And as Professor Kasturi, Baba's biographer, who's written a detailed account of the life of Mother Ishwarama, too, writes, "The Lord chose her as his mother not only as a reward for her past deeds but also in appreciation of what she was capable of in this life." And dear listeners, that is the reason why one must carefully study the life of this divine soul who had the singular opportunity of physically carrying the Lord in her womb for 9 months and then feeding and fostering the divine for years and decades, living almost like his shadow, allowing herself to be chiseled and shaped by the Lord to such an extent that she eventually started glistening and glowing like a brilliant diamond, a brilliant saint, a brilliant soul in the sky of the Sai fraternity, radiating the same love and selflessness that Swami embodies. Her life is something that we should always contemplate upon and learn lessons. And that is the reason why in today's episode of this last segment on Thursday Life, we want to discuss the life of Mother Ishwarama. That is what we plan to do in the next 60 minutes or so. But before that, Let us first offer our loving and most reverential salutations at the lotus feet of the one whose every second was a message, whose every word he uttered was steeped in liberating wisdom, and whose every gesture was simply uplifting. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we sincerely strive to walk on the path laid down by you and shape ourselves as your messengers of love, as your messengers of goodness and peace. With this prayer, let's move on and welcome, dear listeners, to this yet another episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. The time in the studios now is 8:50 and I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, happily at your service. And today, as I mentioned, we discuss the enigmatic and inextricable bond between Mother Ishwaramma and Swami. And joining me in this discussion today is my colleague from the office of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, Brother Harishankar. He too is an alumnus of Bhagwan's University, who did his MBA here after completing his graduation in Naval Engineering and Architecture in IIT, Chennai, Indian Institute of Technology. He joined Bhagwan's University in 2002. In 2000, completed his MBA in 2002, and since then has been happily working in the trust, looking after the affairs. And he too has been blessed to witness the avatar at very close quarters, especially in the last 10 years of his earthly sojourn. And that's the reason why I requested him to join us in this discussion. Welcome, Hari, to this program.
Sairam Bishu, and thank you for having me on.
So, Hari, as I mentioned, the Ishwaramma Day is round the corner. And I just thought that we must discuss about the life of the Divine Mother. And when I come to think of it, whenever in the last few years, I don't know if you remember those scenes, but I have seen so many times, whenever even the word Ishwaramma was uttered by a student or by the children from any state who are performing a play in front of Bhagwan, or Even an elder, you know, the moment the word was uttered, Swami would always get very emotional. You know, you could see that just that word had such impact on him. When you should see that his eyes used to almost become full. And the other, that only, you know, shows, you know, what kind of bond it was between Bhagwan and, you know, just that gesture of Swami had volumes for us to read, I guess.
There were several instances when Swami in his discourses he had mentioned the importance of respecting, loving one's mother. And as he says, his life is his message. And you could see that happening in his own life. The amount of love, the amount of respect that Swami had for his mother. And as you mentioned, this Ishwaramma Day, this was the day that Swami would, in the last many years, he would in fact insist on being in Prashanthi Nilayam and visiting the Samadhi, which is close to the ashram. In fact, I remember that one particular year, Swami was planning to go to Kodaikanal with the students. And like my plan was that soon after, the day after Swami left for Kodaikanal, I too would go to some cooler climes and, you know, enjoy a small vacation.
Yes.
And I had planned to come perhaps sometime after May 6th, something like May 9th. And I remember, excuse me, and I remember that Swami called my father and told him, your son, is he planning to go somewhere for some vacation? My father said, yes. You tell him that he should not go. He should be here. And I will be here on May 6th and he too should be here for that celebrations.
Oh,
so Swami did return and I was also there. As of course, at first...
I mean, that is even Bhagwan's compassion. He wanted you to be there, to be present for this ceremony. I mean, such an important...
Yes, occasion. Very much. He wanted... That was a message, I think, to all of us as to how important this function meant. Because in my mind, I had thought, okay, the celebrations would go on. I have nothing to do with it. But Swami was like, no, there is some purpose. You too should be here. And the message that I got was this, that it is a message for all of us as to how one is to revere one's mother. And it is not a bond that is ever broken. Year after year, Swami would come, apart from mentioning about his mother in his discourses and how people should respect their mother. He would show it in action year after year.
Yes. Amazing. In fact, I remember some time ago in the year 2006, we did on the Radio Sai website, on our e-journal Heart to Heart, a cover story on Mother Ishwaramma. It was a pretty elaborate story on her life. And we printed a copy of this entire Heart to Heart issue and we sent it to Bhagwan, a hard copy. And I later came to know that Bhagwan not only went through this entire issue along with the other elder devotees before, generally they used to have this session, an informal session with the elderly devotees before Swami had his dinner after the bhajans. Swami not only looked at the entire magazine at that time, but after that he asked Brother Satyajit to take it to his bedroom. And later, Brother Satyajit told me how Swami always kept this heart-to-heart issue next to his bed. And many times he would just open this issue and look at all these pictures that this article carried. It was a very elaborate issue and a huge cover story. And Swami would feel so overwhelmed. And he would often do it. You know, I think that was again another message that came. And as you mentioned, it just showed how, you know, in his life, Swami showed how much reverence we should have for the mother and that love that I think existed between them or something, I think which we can never ever explain.
I want to talk here about a small coincidence. You know, like just a few days ago, you came up with this idea that we should do this program.
Yes.
And when you talked to me about it, and just a little after that, I just happened to be browsing a particular website when I came across a very interesting piece of news. They in Harvard University, they just concluded a study called the Grant Study, which has been going on for the last 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it started in the year 1938 and they've concluded it now. And what was the study about? The study followed some Harvard sophomores, some of the students who studied in Harvard, about 268 of them. So this was a $20 million study in which they tracked the lives of all these students. They measured practically every parameter, say physical parameters, what their wealth was, what kind of background they came from, and all kinds of parameters, they only to track what is it that made one happy.
Mm-hmm.
What is the factor, one big factor,
the
what
eternal,
are the factors?
Eternal quest of man.
Yes, the eternal quest, but this is a scientific study. They wanted to go to the heart of the matter. What makes a person satisfied with one's life? And you not believe what they came up with. And nothing else matters. Not your intelligence. Many other factors were considered. The one factor that really stood out is the warmth of the relationships that you have in your life. And more importantly, the relationships you have with your parents. And most important, the relationship you have with your mother. It not only gave you success in life, but you ended up having a lot of satisfaction. You see, both of them coming together happens when your relationship with your mother is so, so strong.
Wow. In fact, even as you say this, you know, my mind goes back to what the research that was done by our ancient sages and saints. You know, they just told us that Matru Devobhava, you always have reverence for your mother. Perhaps, you know, now scientifically Howard is telling us this, that if you want to be happy, you revere your mother, you have the best possible relationship with your mother, that then you will be happy in life. But I think our saints and sages who had done this research for us, and they have given us this, I think. We somehow don't, you know, give it that much of importance. The current generation perhaps doesn't give it so much importance when you say that, you know, Matru Devobhava, mother is almost like God, have the best sort of relationship that you can have with your mother. But now Harvard says it. But when you come to think of it, I think every person who has that beautiful relationship with mother, you know, I think even now there are a lot of children in this country who would not do anything without, you know, getting the blessings of their mother. Even
yes.
If they are going out for 2-day trip, they would take the blessings of their mother.
Yes, but Bishu, this is the age of reason, and this generation does require reasons for doing anything.
Yes.
And I'm glad that Harvard has come up with this study, which in a sense validates what the great spiritual seers of this country have always been saying, But look at it this way, that we have now a fresh way of looking at it.
Yes.
So it really brings up what Swami has been saying so many times. And for me, it was a very important lesson, because I tried as, because there were several times when I would fail in this. But I, each time, I would draw inspiration from Swami's message, from his discourse, from his life, and I would try to apply that in my life.
Wonderful. In fact, even as we talk about the Ishrama Day celebrations, Hari, why don't you give us a brief sketch of how the Ishrama Day celebrations happen in Prashantinagar?
Yeah,
because Swami asked you to come and be a part of the celebration, so I think you should share that with our listeners.
Yes, so that time I was privileged to be part of this Vedam group. So, as you know, like, it is a summer vacations, there are very few students who stay back during the summer vacations. And so it was a handful of us who would be part of the Vedam procession. So you would stand in at the head of the Samadhi road, and we would like ensure that we have the pole position, that when Swami's car turns into the road, his glance would fall on us first. So that was a little game that we used to play. And so Swami would enter the Samadhi road, and we would have the privilege of escorting him into the complex where the Samadhi is of both parents presently stands. So Swami would enter the Sanctum Sanctorum, and that was reserved only for him and some of the close family members. And all of us, the many staff and students who were gathered, we would be all outside, we would be chanting Vedam, and bhajans also would be going on. And so a small puja would be done, and at the end of it, coconuts would be broken and aarti would be offered to the parents as well as to Swami. And after this, Swami would come out and bless the prasadam. So Narayan Seva would be conducted for all the needy people from the villages, from the close by, nearby villages. They would all assemble there, and Narayan Seva would be done, and clothes would be distributed. And this is very reminiscent of the time when it was Mother Ishwarama's privilege that Swami would grant her this one task of, on important festival days, he would give her saris and ask her to go and distribute it to the villages of Prashanti Nilayam, of Puttaparthi. And that tradition is still honored on this day also. The village folk from nearby villages surrounding Prashanti Nilayam, all of them, they receive saris and prasadam on that day.
Yeah, and I remember how the Samadhi used to be crowded. The entire Puttaparthi village almost converges on the Samadhi that day. In fact, even on other days, Harishankar, I think I should share this with you. Other days, I have many times gone to the Samadhi, and I would see so many, you know, going to the Samadhi and sitting there and deriving inspiration and finding something in that place. In fact, I remember so many of my colleagues too, who have been doing that. In fact, there are these three boys who perform Burakatha in front of Bhagwan. You know, they have performed that folk art form comprising of song and dance in Telugu in front of Swami so many times, and they used to go to the Samadhi of Mother Ishwarama and pray, you know, seeking Swami's blessings. And it is very interesting that one of these years, I think 2009 or 2010, when Swami was inside the Samadhi, and the puja, as you mentioned, was going on, towards the conclusion of that, Swami asked for these boys.
Huh.
And so they rushed to the site, and then Swami beckoned them very near and said, "Sing." You know, they had prepared a Burakatha on Mother Ishwarama, and they had performed that once in front of Bhagwan, but now Swami called them, and Swami told, "You sing those Ishwarama songs now in my presence in front of the Samadhi."
A recognition that he had indeed received the prayers before that too.
Yes, it's the same. You pray to Ishwarama, you pray to Swami, it's the same. And I remember that occasion, you know, when there was so much going on outside, serving and everything was going on outside, but inside, Swami was sitting in the Samadhi and listening to this song sung by these two boys. In fact, incidentally, I have that song. Shall we hear to that?
Definitely. Minutes, yes, song. You have provided such a brilliant context.
Yeah, let's listen to that song by this Burakatha trio.
Amma Mahasadhivamma Ishwaramma సాధివం ఈశ్వరం స్త్రీజాతి శిరోమణివం శ్రీతాయికి జనని వినీవం స్త్రీజాతి శిరోమణివం శ్రీతాయికి జనని వినీవం అమ్మా మహాసాధివం ఈశ్వరం అమ్మా పరుల కోసమే పాటు పడితివమ్మా పరుల కోసమే పాటు పడితివమ్మా రూపకారమే ఇహ పరమని తెలిపితివమ్మా త్యాగశీలి వమ్మా అనురాగశీలి ఏడేడు జన్మల అనుబంధము మనది ఎన్ని జన్మల పుణ్యఫలము నీది దేవదేవుడే కన్న తల్లిగా నిన్నెంచుకొనేనమ్మా నిన్ను తల్లిగా పొందిన మాసాయి ఎంత అదృష్టవంతుడో అమ్మా అమ్మా
సో దట్ వాజ్ ద సాంగ్ బుర్రకథ సాంగ్ ఆన్ మదర్ ఈశ్వరమ్మ ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ వన్ ఆఫ్ ద మెనీ సాంగ్స్ ఆఫ్ దట్ బుర్రకథ అండ్ ఫర్ దోస్ హూ డు నాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ తెలుగు ఇట్ యూలజైజెస్ ద మదర్ హౌ బ్లెస్డ్ షీఈస్ What an incredible privilege she had of mothering the divine. In fact, Hari, as we go along, if you think of it, just the name, Ishwaramma, and for those who do not understand Sanskrit, I mean the name itself has everything. You know, Ishwaramma, who is the mother of Ishwar, the mother of the Lord. So it seems like, you know, everything is set so many decades in advance. She is named as Ishwaramma and later Lord Shiva, Ishwara himself is born to her. But maybe we should go back in time and dwell on where she came from and what was her life before Bhagwan came into her life and before actually she became part of the Ratnakaram family.
Yes, that's a very interesting story to actually look into, because think of it, she is now such an important figure in history, but she came from such very, very simple, very humble origins.
Mm-hmm.
And she was born into an agricultural family, a family of very simple farmers who stayed at that time hundreds of miles away from Puttaparthi.
Mm-hmm.
They in fact stayed in a village called Kolimikuntla, which was in the Kurnool district, and which was at that time it was part of the Nizam's dominion.
Mm-hmm.
So the Nizam of Hyderabad would rule that area in which this Kolimikuntla okay. was. So her name, her father's name was Subbaraju.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened that actually Kondamaraju, he was on a pilgrimage to Sri Sailam, and from there he decided that he would visit some distant relatives.
Mm-hmm.
This was an opportunity he had got. And it was then that he landed in this particular village and his eyes fell on Ishwaramma and he decided that she would be this simple, beautiful young woman. She would make the ideal granddaughter-in-law daughter-in-law for his family. And then he also noticed one more thing, that even the area where Subbaraju stayed, the family of Ishwaramma stayed at that time, it was a Naxal infested area. There was a lot mm-hmm. of violence in that area. And so they felt that this environment was not something that would be very, you know, it is very harmful kind of environment. So he felt that they would be safer near Puttaparthi. So that is how he persuaded Subbaraju to actually sell away his lands and come to Puttaparthi and stay.
Mm-hmm.
And he came, he bought some lands in Karnataka, Nagepalli, which is, as you know, just a few kilometers away. So about 2 kilometers from here. And he purchased lands and he was staying there. And soon after, the union of Kondamaraju's son, Peddavenkamaraju, and Ishwaramma took place. And that was how she made her entry into the Ratnakaram family.
Yeah, wonderful. And we know that how the mother-in-law of Mother Ishwaramma prayed so much before Swami was born. She was doing that Satyanarayana Puja, and there is that story of how a ball of blue light actually entered into Mother Ishwaramma one day when she was drawing water from the well, and that is how she conceived Swami. And we know the story of Swami's birth. But I think the most important thing when we think about her life is, you know, rearing a child who is so extraordinary. You know, a child who is so unique. Because even when Swami was born, they say he never cried.
Yes. You see, there is this very interesting thing that we have to notice. The distinction between an avatar's life and the life of perhaps a saint or a prophet that we hear about. Now, typically what happens is they are born just like you and I. For many years they live very ordinary lives like you and I. And at some point of time an event occurs, a critical event occurs, an epiphany, and there's a revelation to them. I'm not saying that they're ordinary human beings, but at some point of time they make the transition from being an ordinary human being to suddenly becoming a divine master. There's a critical event that yes. transforms them in a trice. But with Swami, Shukanadi actually mentions this. It says that this being who has come down as Sathya Sai Baba, he is someone who has never come down from the state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So even as we saw Swami acting, talking, you know, being the way he was, at no point of time did he sway away from that state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. This is something our minds cannot comprehend. But if you go by what the scriptures said, he had already descended a perfected master, a perfected being.
Yes.
And for us human beings, we cannot understand that kind of existence, that kind of being, the behavior that comes from that kind of source. And this was what Ishwaramma began to see in that divine child. As you said, first she noticed that this was a child that did not cry so often.
Yes.
And then as the child grew up, she noticed some very strange things. The grave bearing that he had when he was amongst their family members. And then he had this aversion for non-vegetarian food.
Yes.
He would seek, in fact, he would sometimes go to the very often to the house of Karnam Subbamma, who was a Brahmin lady, and he would rather have food in their house where there was no meat that was cooked.
Yes.
Right. And then she noticed one very strange thing, a totally anomalous behavior for a child. There were many occasions when the family, when the elders of the family, they would call people or, you know, get some of these clothes, new clothes, yes. on festive occasions from, say, Anantapur or Hindupur, the big towns which are close by. And when these clothes would come, everybody, you know, it was a festive occasion, they would all go and, you know, select the best possible clothes for them. But she noticed this boy, he would just stand on the side, wait for everybody to make their choice. And when she would press, no, you take something, he would say, I don't have any choice. I don't have any like or dislike. Let everyone pick whatever they wish and I will take what remains.
I mean, this is so strange for a mother, a little one, when you have every child, generally you would see, you know, saying, I want this, you know. And you are, even these days you want, you like this color, you want this shirt, you want. Yes. And people will always grab and say, no, I want this, I would want that. And here is a little one who is just saying that, no, is almost speaking like a realized soul.
Yes.
Saying, let everyone take whatever they want and I will take whatever is left.
Yes, and she mentions that, you know, even in the matter of food, he did not, neither did he seem to have any preference. not even, as we all of us know, how Swami was such a very, very, very spare eater. And this was one more, you know, one cause of worry for her, that how was this child, how is he this way, why isn't he like a normal child?
Normal child.
And added to that was now the pastimes that he would undertake. You know, normally, of course, he did play along with the other children of his age, but he had one more pastime, and that was that he would lead bhajans for them.
Yes.
Or he would begin to talk to them about mysterious things like God and, you know, like a particular Sai Baba and so on.
Yes.
So these were causes of immense worry for her. And one more fact was that the children now began calling him Brahmagnani.
Yes. In fact, there's one place which is recorded by Professor Kasturi where Mother Ishwarama says, "No, this is something I could never understand about Swami. You know, how were we different? No, what made him so deeply sober and serious? Because, you know, Mother Ishwarama, she should think that we are such ordinary people, we are normal people, we are, why can't he be just like us?" And to add it to that, you know, Swami had always great talent as a poet, as a singer, as a dancer, as a playwright, as a composer, and you could see like prodigious talent, and you wondered that, you know, what fantastic it would be if this boy, you know, took up any of these talents. But yes, you would see that, you know, though he was endowed so much, but there was this aloofness about him.
Yes, there were two things, like as you just mentioned, when he said talent, I remembered that it was his elder brother's dream that Swami would end up as a collector, as yes, an IAS officer, an yes, officer of the Indian Administrative Service. And the second thing you mentioned, talent. Now, and in that particular talent, you said his talent for poetry. And this is where one more thing that began to trouble Mother Ishwarama was this, that he would write exquisite poetry, very rich poetry, but in that poetry he would single out for criticism some of the elders in the village. A young child, and he was trying to take on the elders of the village, trying to point out what their wayward behavior was.
And all this even before Swami had declared his avatarhood.
Yes. So from the very beginning, she was, you know, she was in the company of a child who was not a child in any sense of the matter.
Yes. In fact, she says, you know, I at last began to wonder whether the label Brahmagyani, which the village elders had stuck on Swami, which initially she thought was a mockery, was maybe in fact indeed true. If yes, that was a reality, because everything he was doing was like a Brahmagyani, like a realized soul.
And you can see some of these parallels between the Krishna avatar,
oh yes,
and Lord, our own Lord Satya.
Yes, I think if you saw the Krishna avatar, Lord Krishna was the eighth child, and Mother Devaki had to undergo so much in the hands of Kamsa, the heinous designs of Kamsa, and she lost all her children before Krishna was born. And if you look at the life of Mother Ishwarama, I think there were beautiful parallels in that sense, in the sense that mother also had four miscarriages. You know, she had a son and she had a daughter, but Swami was the eighth child, interestingly, and she had gone through a lot, you know, for a mother to lose four children, four miscarriages is not something which you can really take it lying down. No, she had to go through so much, and Swami was born as the eighth child. And after that, you know, just like Mother Yashoda, the sort of the ecstasies and the agonies were there all the time, because, you know, you saw that this little one is the darling of everyone, just like Lord Krishna was.
Yeah.
And here, just like Lord Krishna used to have his own team of Gopalas and Gopis, and they used to have their fun. But at the same time, in the midst of fun, something extraordinary used to happen.
Yeah.
Suddenly you will find a demon in the disguise of a cobra, a demon in the disguise of a big, huge bird. And even as they were playing, you know, Swami would have just demolished that demon. And only in the end of it you realize, oh my God, what is happening? Who is this guy among us? And when Devaki used to hear all this, and you know, Yashoda used to hear all this, used to just, you know, be petrified. And I think you saw the same things in Bhagwan's life too. I mean, there was occasions when, after Swami started, you know, curing people, and, you know, Swami sort of popularity started growing. Even this is like even before he had declared his avatarhood, you know. Still, as always, people were always jealous, and there was this group of people who wanted to burn down the hut in which Swami was staying.
Yes.
And in fact, on that day, Mother Isharama, Swami says later in a discourse, that she sensed some danger and she came to Swami and told Swami, I'm afraid that some harm may come to you. I don't know, I feel something very strange within me, something not very pleasant. And Swami even at that time says, don't worry, nothing will happen to me. You give a body attachment. You know, at that time Swami tells her, you give a body attachment. And on that occasion, you know, Swami sleeps in that hut, and that night the miscreants, they set the hut on fire, and to everyone's surprise, there is instantaneous rain, and it rains only on top of the hut, and the surrounding areas are not wet. And there's another occasion. I mean, there are so many like this. I think maybe we should just share one more, where you had the invitation for Bhagwan to visit one more house, where she offered to Swami vadas. You know, this vadas, the South Indian delicacy. And this was made out of alasandrulu. In fact, people knew that Swami liked this alasandrulu. Alasandrulu is a pulse. Yeah, it's a grain. So they knew that Swami liked those vadas. And so she made this, and she had actually put poison inside that. And Swami knew this. In fact, even before Swami went, Swami had told that should anything happen to me, you should not get worried. And so Swami goes there, and when he is offered the vadas, he partakes them, and he returns to the home, and then his body becomes blue. And then what happens is even more interesting. Swami asks Mother Isharama to wave her hand. And as she does that, vibhuti appears in her hand. And so she mixes the vibhuti in water, and then Swami takes that vibhuti, and that is when slowly Swami's body returns to its normal color. And Mother Isharama is actually astonished, what is happening to me? No, this is something which she had never done. And Swami later reveals that I gave her the power on that occasion. So if you think of this, you know, all these experiences that a mother is going through with this phenomenal child, you know, it's very hard to imagine what would be going on in her mind.
Yes, and to imagine beyond these, there is one incident which is very reminiscent of an incident that took place in Lord Krishna's life too. And this was, she says, when Swami was only 9 months old. And she remembers she had given a bath, she had put the, you know, kumkum on his forehead, etc. Laid him to sleep, and she moved on to do some of the household chores. And she said something that had not, very unusual happened, and that she heard the baby cry. And she says she, for whatever reason, she had not heard the baby ever cry. And then she went back to the cradle to see what is happening to comfort the child. And the baby seemed to be sleeping. But anyway, she took the child, the small little one, and placed the child in her lap. And when she placed it, she noticed one halo around the child's head. And she, as she mentioned to some of the devotees, this was not a halo that was hot or very blinding kind of light. It was very soothing light, a very entrancing kind of light, which mesmerized her. And she just sat and kept looking and looking at that visage with that halo around. And she was so lost that for a very long time she didn't know what was happening around her. And it took her mother-in-law to come and shake her out of her reverie. And she mentioned to her mother-in-law, you know, this is what happened. This is what I have witnessed. And the mother-in-law told her, don't tell anyone. Because we do not know how people will understand it, what kind of tales they will carry. But this was that, she had that vision of who that little child was.
No, I think so both these mothers, they had these instances when they were really mesmerized, as you mentioned, by this glimpses of this infinite power that was encased in that bundle of joy. And even as they were trying to rear the child, I think they were all the time amazed with what was happening. And all the time trying to, I think, pray to the gods that they knew to make the child ordinary. And I think that was the prayer. You know, you are happy that something astounding he did, but that is so unusual. And you are all the time worried what will happen to this kid, you know, what will other people think? They'll think this whole family is gone crazy. This is some ethereal being here. So I think all the time mother, what she was doing was praying to all the gods, please make Satya an ordinary,
normal child. And as nothing could help her, because the events only began to escalate.
Yes.
Swami, more and more, he began to express his divinity and his divine powers. They started manifesting themselves more and more. And the time came when Bhagwan had to actually finally announce to the world that he had come, that he had arrived. And he did so first by cutting the ties with his family. And what a shock it would have been for them to hear those words, that I do not belong to you. Maya has gone and my devotees are calling, my work is calling, I have to go to them.
I think that would have been, you know, very difficult to even think how much traumatic it would have been for the mother. You know, after so much of prayer and penitence, she's got this child.
Yes.
And she's so happy, okay, this child is so talented and so blessed. But then within a few years, he says, I don't belong to you.
Yeah.
And it happens in a very dramatic manner, right?
Yes, the events at Urvakonda, they're very momentous. Because that was when the people began at Urvakonda, they were the first to actually witness this event where Swami declared that who he was, that he belonged to the entire world. He left his brother's house and moved out and began to announce that he was the guru who had come to ward off all their troubles. And word at that time, you know, how communication was. And word had not yet reached Puttaparthi where Ishwaramma stayed that these events had taken place. It was quite some time, maybe a week before she came to know of these events which were taking place there. And that was because of some of the rumors that she had begun to hear. She immediately rushed to Puttaparthi, to Urvakonda to see what was happening. And there the moment Swami saw her, the young Satya, 14-year-old lad, looking at his mother, and he says, Maya has come.
Oh my God.
And the moment she heard these words, she just fainted. It would have been such an immense shock that that young Satya, that stripling lad, the apple of her eye, now dissociating himself because his mission was such a wider audience that he was trying to reach out to. And this really came as a shock to her. And you can see this theme playing through her entire life.
Yes.
She was witness at very close quarters to Swami's divinity. And at the same time, she could not get over the fact that this was her child.
Yes.
It was a very unique seesaw kind of emotions that she had to go through.
I think she was all the time going through this roller coaster ride of, you know, of recognizing, yes, he is divine, but at the same time not able to get over that motherly feeling and that possessiveness.
Yes.
That it's my child, it is my child. And so I think that is why, you know, even though she heard all this, you know, even though she was witness to so many mysterious manifestations of Bhagwan, but she was all the time worried about, you know, those little things that mothers would worry about. Did he sleep well? Did he eat well? You know, even when Swami was in Urvakonda, as you are mentioning, and all this news used to come about how Swami cured someone, how Swami healed someone, how Swami advised someone, how Swami actually went out of the way and rescued someone, how someone's problem was solved and all that. She used to hear all this, and then at the end of it, she used to ask, how is he looking?
Mm-hmm.
Is he eating well?
Yes.
Are they looking after him well? You know, that was that concern, and I think that's what we saw in the mother entire life, all the time concerned about Swami.
And the real test for her came in Guru Purnima 1963.
Yes.
This was when Swami suffered apparently a paralytic stroke. And she could see that Swami is suffering day after day. Actually, his condition seemed to worsen.
And the rumors that were going on in Parthi.
Many.
Baba's power, there are people who are saying that we told you his power is going to diminish. We told you that he's not a genuine person.
Yeah. And the thing was that Swami was refusing any kind of medical attention. Even a doctor who was a devotee, he came rushing from Karnataka to administer to Swami, but very flatly he refused all this attention. And on the very last day, when it seemed that, you know, it was really getting to the worst, and then Swami insisted that it is Guru Purnima day, I have to go and address my devotees, and there were some devotees who had to literally lift Swami's body and bring him down. Can you imagine the suffering, the pangs which that mother would have gone through to witness all this? And yet Swami was that these devotees have come and I have to give them darshan, I have to speak to them. And so she could not bear this, and so she moved away. And therefore she was not witness to that miracle which took place. The next moment, when Swami cured himself totally in front of all those devotees, his powerful voice came booming through the microphone, and the entire audience was agog at having watched that miracle take place. But as the mother, she could not. But she remarked at that moment that we all call him Satya, but his Satya we will never know.
We will never know what the truth is.
What the truth about this being is.
Yes.
And that was her struggle as she began
to... I think that struggle, as you mentioned, you know, that was a continuous saga in her life. And as we were talking, you know, the little things that she was concerned about, that food, you know, there were so many occasions when Swami is always a poor eater, even from even when he was small. And Swami is like a mitahari. You should always eat very little. And Swami used to say that, me anandame na aharamu, you know, your bliss is my food. And she used to always think, I mean, how can this be true? How can our bliss be his food? I can never ever understand this. And in fact, that is the reason why even when she traveled with Swami to any place, she used to smuggle herself into the kitchen of the host and, you know, try to make something which was of Andhra cuisine or, you know, something that she felt Swami would like. And when that was a concern, and to the extent she used to go all the time to ensure, you know, like a mother seeing that, you know, her son is eating well, her son is looked after well.
One very amusing thing I came across, I want to remark, was that how she would, when at the very beginning and Swami started granting audience to so many devotees, and there were so many pandits, you know, well versed in the scriptures, who would come and they would try to put questions to Swami to sort of verify, you know, is he who he claims he is. And she would be sitting in that audience, and she says she used to pray fervently to gods, whoever they were, that he should be able to answer correctly and satisfy them. And in fact, it is said that when Swami Amritananda, he visited the ashram in 1956, she actually went up to him and asked him, he is saying so many things, and are they all correct? Like, such was her concern that,
yes,
you know, that little boy of hers, that
yes,
he should be able to face these pandits,
and
little knowing that who he really was.
And Swami Amritanandamai's answer to Mother Isharama also is profound. You know, he says, Amma, he is Parabrahma. He knows everything. He is my guru and he is my God. Why are you even thinking like this?
Yes, he was the guru of gurus. And yet the mother, like, it is, her faith was so simple.
Yes. And I think one of these, another huge trauma that she went through was when Bhagwan suddenly out of the blue decided that he is going to build the Prashantinilayam Mandir. I think that was before 1950, as we know. And in fact, she was so aggrieved at what she considered was Swami's determination to build that temple at Puttaparthi. Basically, Prashantinilayam, which was at arm's length from Puttaparthi. You know, she's actually so troubled. So she, when she comes to know of this, she rushes to Swami and she says, Swami, what is this I hear? You see, you're going to build a big mandir on that hill. Why do you want to go to a spot which is so far and it is filled with jungle and there are snakes and there are scorpions? How will the old and the sick come to you? Are you not going to bother about these normal people here? Why you want to deny them your darshan? You know, what is going to happen to all these people of Puttaparthi? And then she says, I have seen that mark of wheel, that chakra. He says, I have seen that chakra on your feet, and that is why, Swami, you keep going from one place to another.
What, that is a very unique interpretation of what,
yes,
the chakras mean.
Yeah, I mean, I know of my colleagues who are very close to Swami who have seen Swami's feet having that Shankha and Chakra sign, like the signs of Lord Vishnu.
Yes.
So here is mother who is constantly going on a barrage of questions, flooding Swami with why you want to build this ashram. And then she even goes to the extent of saying, this mandir is enough for you, referring to that old mandir, Pata Mandir. You know, it's better to have a small place that is filled with people than a huge building half empty.
And then what Swami goes on to say, that this place is going to become a Tirupati, a Shirdi and a Kashi.
Kashi. I think it's really fantastic, and that declaration that Swami made. And I think the for me, looking from Mother Ishwarama's perspective, the kind of thing that she went through when Bhagwan announced this. And of course, Swami at that time says that millions will come. Why millions? You know, there will not be a place for people to stand. And there'll come a time when even if you just see a glimpse, a orange speck at a distance, you will feel yourself fortunate.
And in all these fears, there's this one fear that would her son stay with her? She allowed Swami to be among devotees and spend time with them and give her a little time every day. But her fear was because there were now people of great eminence who were coming to Swami, such as the Raja of Mysore. Then there was the coffee estate owner, Sakamma. And all these people, what they were telling Swami was, Swami, we have to go to such travels to come to Puttaparthi.
No roads to Puttaparthi.
No roads and bullock cart journeys and name it. And they were pleading to Swami that why don't you settle in a more convenient place like Bangalore or one of the cities.
Mysore.
One of the cities where they promised that they'll give Swami all the luxuries, all the amenities that befitted his status.
From their point of view, easy for them to have Swami's darshan.
Yes, and it is then that Swami gave her that promise that this Puttaparthi is going to be my kshetra.
Yes.
And he gives her that promise that it is Puttaparthi which will be host to the avatar.
Yes.
And he says it's not a blessing for you, it is a blessing to this place and it is a blessing for all my devotees.
Amazing. In fact, on that occasion, Mother Ishwarama was so concerned that she even went to the extent of telling Swami that if you leave Puttaparthi, I'll give up my life. And here was Swami giving her a promise for life that he is going to be in Puttaparthi. And we also know how Swami promised her that he will always speak in Telugu, in the mother tongue, motherland and mother tongue. I think that was again two lessons that we learned from Swami's life: reverence towards the motherland.
Yes.
And reverence towards mother and the mother tongue. In fact, Hari, probably we'll take a break here and let's listen to that beautiful song sung by Kavita Krishnamurti.
Yes.
Where she hails Swami as the Kaliyuga avatar and she hails the mother, saying how lucky she was.
Yes.
Bhakti Bhakti भगवंत गुरु चतुष नाम बपुए तिन के पद वंदन किए मेटत विघ्न अने Thank you.
Sairam Vishu.
Yeah.
And continuing from where we left off as we began this song, now you mentioned about how the Prashanti Mandir had come up in spite of all the reservations the mother had, and it brought about a sea change in that relationship she had with Swami on the physical plane.
Yes.
Now it happened that she was like any of the devotees, and if she wanted, her access to Swami had come down so much that she had to be like any other devotee, seek some time with Swami.
In fact, Swami used to stay in one end of Prashanti Mandir.
Yes.
His residence was that tiny room on the western side.
Mm.
And on the eastern side was where Swami's dining room was, the little dining room. And
yeah.
Ishrama had access only to that.
Yes. And As, and because of this, like, there were only very restricted times when she could see Swami.
Yes.
And really we begin to wonder, like, why did Swami subject her to this kind of, let's say, suffering, let's call it suffering. Why did Swami subject her to something like this? And as we read the story of her life, we realize the transition that she was going through. She went from being the mother of that physical body, she went on to become a much expanded being. She went on to become mother to all the devotees who were coming to Swami.
In fact, I think that is what started happening, as you mentioned very rightly. Once she started coming to Prashantilim and she started living in Prashantilim, she ended
yes.
up actually living in one of the small rooms inside the Prashantilim Mandir.
Yes.
And Professor Kasturi writes how all the women folk, especially those distressed ones, and especially those who are widowed and who have a lot of problems,
yes.
they used to always go to her. And she was a very patient listener. She used to give very patient hearing to all their problems, and they used to feel so happy being in her presence, feel so empowered. And she was one who always brought their problems to Swami. In
yes.
fact, there are two things that I want to mention here. One thing is, you know, how Swami used to all the time encourage and empower the woman, in the sense that Swami was the one who said, no, no, woman also can chant Vedam. Woman also can chant Om. Woman also can chant Gayatri Mantra. Though, you know, somewhere in our history during the, in the intervening ages, somehow it had got convoluted and they said woman cannot chant Om and woman cannot chant Gayatri. But here was Swami saying that woman can do all this, and Mother Isharama was the person who was so happy to hear this.
Yes.
And all these distressed women folk, when they came to her, she was their champion. You know, generally you would see that when you have such a son, you will want to, you know, the tendency nowadays that you see all the time is you want to take advantage of that situation. You know, but here was mother who took advantage, if ever she took advantage of her proximity to Swami, it was only for others. Means I have spoken to someone who is from the district of West Godavari, and they narrated to me an incident how on one occasion a family came from West Godavari and they had a sick child, and they had stayed on in Prashanti for 7 days, and Swami had not actually interacted with them, and the family was feeling very aggrieved and they wanted to leave the next day because they didn't have resources to actually to stay for one more day. And so they didn't know what to do. As a last resort, they went to Mother Isharama and prayed, and you know, they poured out their feelings, and Mother Isharama straight took that little one in her hand and went straight to Swami's room upstairs.
And what audacity.
She just did it.
Where did it come from? Yeah.
She just did it. And she went to Swami and she told Swami, please, you have to cure this little one. They have come all the way. They cannot stay one more day. You have to cure them. You know, Swami was like perhaps so perplexed. No one would dare to do that with Swami.
In fact, he asked a question like, was it they who came to you asking that you should recommend
yes.
their case to me?
Yes. So here, and she says, no, Swami, it is I have brought her and you have to cure. And Swami, on that occasion, cures the child. And that is really something so beautiful about her character. As you mentioned, you know, she has metamorphing from just being a mother of the avatar
yes.
to becoming mother of humanity, mother of society, mother of the world.
Yes.
She was slowly transforming into that.
And as Kasturi ji mentions, that when the general hospital, the 12-bed general hospital was started in Prashantinilayam, she was the one who was the happiest.
Yes.
And she had prayed to Swami on numerous occasions that a lady doctor should be available in this hospital to cater to the needs of all the women folk who are here. And on many occasions she would take women who were sick, she would take them to the hospital and inquire about their welfare after, you know, they were diagnosed and their care was going on. And there was one occasion when there was an eye camp, an optical diseases treatment camp, which took place in Prashantinilayam. It was a very big event, and several people from the village, they were called and they were given treatment. And she was even at that age, she was seen flitting around with so much energy, and she was volunteering there.
I think that she was so happy that, you know, all that energy came from that spirit that so many women folk
yes.
of the village are not being looked after.
Yes. And in many ways, you can see that she was at the source of so many of the activities which we today see that, you know, Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust is so active in.
Yes.
Kasturiji talks about one very interesting thing about how she saw all these, you know, so many children devotees who would be coming to Swami, and she would notice many of them were so poor. They did not have resources for education. And she would pray to Swami that those children should be educated. She would take money and she would ensure that month after month, money would be sent to pay their fees. And it would be, at that time, it was through something called money order.
Yes.
And money order would go through the postmaster of Prashantinilayam. And the postmaster of Prashantinilayam at that time was none other than Kasturiji.
Yes.
And so that...
a personal witness to this.
Yes. And how? She herself was unlettered. And she knew the value of education. And not only that, she knew the value of education particularly for women.
Yes.
Because Kasturiji mentions how this really came about. That once what happened, the trip to East Africa, she had so many reservations on hearing about the wild animals and the kind of people over there that she did not know, and she had so many fears as to what would happen. And when Bhagwan came back and mentioned all these interesting events that took place over there, she realized that her fears were born out of ignorance.
Yes.
And so she said that, you know, women folk should also be educated. And this was at the time when Swami had started the Anantapur College. Within a week of returning from East Africa, Swami inaugurated the Anantapur College
for
women. The foundation stone was laid. And then at that time, she made a very interesting allegory. She says that the husband and the wife, she compares them to the two buffaloes who are yoked to pull a cart. And she says, if there is one buffalo that is strong and alert, whereas the other one is weak and blind, do you expect that the movement of the cart will be uniform? And so she says that even the wife should be educated so that the family goes on in very smooth manner. So that was her prayer to Swami, that he should always ensure that women are empowered, that women are educated.
And Swami started the first campus for women.
Yes, in the educational campus, the first one that was inaugurated was for women. And if I can just mention one more thing, that we should consider the kind of background that Mother Ishwarama came from. As I mentioned, a farmer's family, she was unlettered, knew very little about science. But she would champion the cause of science, and to the women she would educate them not to believe in magical practices and the quacks.
Yes.
Who were very prevalent in villages, not to believe in them to provide medical attention, but to come to the hospital.
Yes.
Where very scientific methods were being used to cure people of their diseases.
And she was very happy when, you know, I forget the name of the lady doctor.
Dr. Jayalakshmi,
who came who used to serve for very long periods in the general hospital.
Yes. And she was an gynecologist, obstetrician and gynecologist.
Yes.
So, this was something that was really worth...
She was so modern in her outlook. And whenever Swami did anything for the woman, and I think she was the one who was really... happy to the core. And the other incident that comes to my mind is how on one occasion a news came to Swami about one lady who had fainted in her house. That was because in those days we didn't have gas and other ways for cooking, so she was using this charcoal, and the smell of the charcoal was so much that it suffocated her and she had actually fainted. And none of the neighbors knew about it until the next morning, 10 o'clock. And when Bhagwan came to know of this, Swami said, what is this? People here should be concerned about who is living the next door. It should not be as if you are living in an island. Yes. You should be very conscious of who is living next door and what are their problems, what are their trials, you know, sharing their joys and sorrows. That's how we should live in a society. And Mother Ishwarama, in fact, Swami goes on to say that every day you should make it a point to think of the welfare of your other members in the society. And Mother Ishwarama, she makes it a point after listening to Bhagwan that day to go to every house in Prashantinilayam and inquire about their welfare every morning. She starts that practice. And as she was doing this, one day there was this construction going on of some structure, and there's a pile of bricks, and she accidentally tripped and she fell down. and because of that she got hurt. And then when this news reached Swami, Swami came hurriedly to mother and inquired about her welfare, and she told, Swami said, why are you walking unnecessarily all around the ashram? And she said, Swami, you can do anything by your mere will, but we cannot. I have to go, and I, as per your direction, I have to go, and I have to incur the welfare of all. And of course, Swami, out of his immense compassion on that occasion, you know, he created Vibhuti, and she was immediately cured. I mean, you have seen this instances of, you know, how Swami also, you know, went out of his way all the time to ensure that whenever there was the slightest pain or any discomfort to the mother, that it is relieved.
Yes, and one more aspect I think this brings out is the simplicity and the humility of this sweet lady. And this is seen in so many incidents, but there's one that really comes to mind. This was when Swami had to allay her many fears about how Swami was when he used to travel, and Swami used to take her around in some of these travels. And one such occasion, Swami was in Uttar Pradesh, and the governor of Uttar Pradesh, Burgul Ramakrishna Rao, his secretary had detailed the retinue in which Swami would travel. And in that, a Rolls Royce had been allocated to Mother Ishwaramma to travel in. And she shunned that Rolls Royce. She said no, and she went and joined the devotees. There was a separate van which was marked for the devotees who came from Prashanthi Nilayam, who were part of that retinue. She joined them and she regaled them with all the stories.
So she's just happy traveling with other simple women folk.
Yes, she was. That was where she really, her life was, among them, you know, among the devotees of Swami. And that is how, very simple woman, she shunned all these luxuries so that she could be of service.
And she shunned everything. So many things that could actually came naturally to her, being the mother of the avatar.
Yeah.
I mean, on one hand, from the whole spectrum of, you know, getting some extra money and luxuries to the point of being adored as a goddess.
Yes.
No?
Mother.
As the divine mother, as the goddess. In fact, there, Professor Kasturi writes how during Navratri, where the mother goddess is worshipped as Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati on 3 days of the Navratri, 3 days each. And the devotees actually wanted to worship Mother Ishwaramma as the mother and as the physical representation of mother. But Ishwaramma just was totally out of sight.
Yes.
On those occasions, and she would never allow herself to be adored in such a manner. In fact, she would wait for the puja. You know, she would want to participate, but she knows that if she goes there, she'd actually be made to sit on the pedestal. So she would wait for the puja to reach conclusion and quietly go and join the crowd and sit somewhere in the end just to witness the celebration.
And as you can see, all we have been sort of witnessed in this few minutes that we have talked about this great lady, we have sort of seen this great spiritual depth of that soul and the evolution from, you know, as we mentioned, the mother to mother of humanity, of all humanity. And this spiritual life was now going to be crowned with the darshan, which many of us crave for.
And I think if you see her life, you know, we started talking about how she was this doting mother.
Yes.
All the time on this seesaw of overpowering motherly love for Bhagwan, at the same time getting those glimpses. And I think it came to a stage where, you know, she accepted Swami's divinity. At the same time, you know, overpowered with her concern for the divine son. But I think as time went by, she saw this huge manifestation of the avatarhood, and she slowly began accepting that Swami is the Lord, and she slowly transformed into becoming a devotee, a very sincere, exemplary devotee, and I think a very pure and pious devotee of the Lord. And Swami used to always, I remember on discourses, always laud her simplicity and how she was just like a religious, chaste Hindu wife, and the purity of her soul. And I think the pinnacle of this was the blessing that Swami gave before she passed away, where, in fact, she very humorously narrates this to Peddabottu, where one day she calls Peddabattu, who was a very elderly lady at that time, who had the chance of seeing Shirdi Sai and later coming to Bhagwan. She calls Peddabattu near and says, "No, I want to tell you something, something that happened to me. Don't tell anyone," she says Peddabattu, and the Peddabattu asks, "Okay, what is it? Tell me." She says, "You know what? Swami is God." Okay, you know, this is the realization that happens to her. She whispers actually, and Peddabattu of course laughs, just like I laughed and you laughed, you know. And then she asks, "Why are you laughing?" And she says, "No, you tell me what happened. Why are you saying this?" And then she says that, "You know, I was not keeping well last few days, and I was having this high fever for 4 days, and Swami came to me," she says. So Peddabattu asks, did he come to you in a dream? She says, "No, Swami came to me physically, and even as I was rolling on my bed, she just called me gently, 'Ammai, Ammai.' As Swami used to call her Gram, 'Ammai, Ammai.' And Swami said, 'How do you feel?' And she said, 'Swami, my whole body is aching.' Then Swami simply says, 'Okay, just look up and see.' Swami says, and then she says, 'I saw not Baba, not our Swami, but I tell you, I saw Sri Ramachandra, I saw Lord Rama with Kiritam and Kodandam, with the crown and the bow.' And she says, 'I raised my folded hands and struggled to sit up and to watch that beautiful form.' And in the end, you know, when Swami returned to his form again, Swami again gave her vibhuti and sun. Then Swami pretended as if nothing has happened, and Swami said, 'Your fever will go down.' But only she knew what a blessing she had been bestowed by Swami. And I think that was the kind of reward that Swami wanted to perhaps give her before her final moment.
Yes, this seemed to be like the curtains, as the curtains were being drawn on her physical sojourn, and what a journey it was being mother to the avatar. And Swami narrates the very last moment, and this is a sign of a great devotee, that we must notice, as Swami also mentions, that look out for this sign of a great devotee. So he talks about the last moments of Mother Ishwaramma. He says on that day, like, she had actually, the previous evening she had gone, she had one small desire to give a gift to her granddaughter, and she had gone and bought a beautiful sari for her and gifts for her granddaughter. And as such, Swami says that all her desires, earthly desires, had been fulfilled. And this was the 6th of May, 1972, and the summer course was on. There were thousands of young men and women who had gathered to hear about Indian culture and spirituality. And this day, as the summer classes were on, Swami says at 7 o'clock, the breakfast had to be served to the students. And Swami went for his bath, and Mother Ishwaram also had finished her bath. She was drinking her coffee, and she got up for something, and all of a sudden she cried out, "Swami, Swami." And Swami just responded, "Vastunnanu, Vastunnanu, coming, I am coming." And that was it. She breathed her last. And Swami says
that connection had happened. She called out for Swami, and Swami responded immediately.
Yes. And Swami says, this is the sign of a great devotee, that in that last moment, she remembers, the devotee remembers God and calls out the name of that Lord.
In fact, Swami says there were so many family relatives with her at that time.
Yes. And of all, she remembered Swami, not Satya. She remembered Swami. God, at that last moment. And Swami says, this is the culmination of a life lived with true devotion and true spirituality.
Wonderful. In fact, Swami says how that call was similar to the call of Gajendra, the elephant, who called out for the Lord, and the Lord responded. But the most fascinating thing, you know, about her life and about Swami's relationship with Mother Ishwaramma is actually what happened after this. We have heard so many times Swami narrate how Mother Ishwaramma comes to Bhagwan even now. And we have heard so many times Swami saying that even now Mother Ishwaramma comes. She is not gone anywhere. She is all the time with me. In fact, on one occasion Swami said she came in her physical body. And Swami said that she advised advised Swami, saying, "You please do not accept handkerchiefs from everyone, Swami, because not everyone is a devotee, though everyone may pretend to be a devotee, and there could be someone with evil intentions, and you know, someone could smear anything, any wrong substance on the handkerchief, and you take every handkerchief and you know, you wipe your face and you wipe your lip, it could probably do you harm. So even to that, even after her passing, she's all the time concerned about Swami.
And Swami, in a similar context, I remember him remarking, and perhaps this was in 2006 or 7, in one discourse, and Swami said that this is true of all mothers. He said that do not think that once the mother passes away from the physical plane that you no longer have her around you. She is always there, she will always protect you in your time of need.
And her blessings are, I think, the strongest power,
yes,
the force
said,
and
yes,
the shield.
Yes,
that we always have.
Yes, and in this way Swami really epitomized and held up one of the great ideals of this land.
Absolutely.
Of holding, of revering one's parents as God. And in Swami's life, there are many such instances where he has stood for such noble ideals. But primarily, I would say this is one such ideal which he has repeated several times,
yes,
in his discourses, and it is all the more powerful for us because we saw how in his actual life he had led these principles.
Absolutely. Hari, when we started this program, I played one song from the Burrakatha, and I told you how Swami loved listening to the songs on Mother Isharama. And as we conclude this program, I want to play the song with which these boys who used to do this Burrakatha on Isharamma used to conclude their presentation.
Yes.
Because I think that's a very beautiful song. Even though we don't understand the language,
yes,
still I think we can appreciate the feeling and the emotion that is conveyed.
And I remember the emotion that Swami would go through as he used to listen to these songs. So it makes it very alive for me.
సారి మరలను పుట్టవము మహేశ్వరమ్మ ఒక్కసారి మరలను పుట్టవము మహేశ్వరను కదలు గన్న పర్తి ఎంత మారిపోయిందో చూడవమ్మ ఒక్కసారి మరలను పుట్టవము ఎప్పుడో స్వామి నీకు మాటిచ్చెను గురుతుందా ఎప్పుడో స్వామి నీకు మాటిచ్చెను గురుతుందా పుట్టపర్తి మరో తిరుపతవుతుందని కదా పుట్టపర్తి మరో తిరుపతవుతుందని కదా గణపరపతి పెరిగెను మరి తిరుపతి కన్నా గణపరపతి పెరిగెను మరి తిరుపతి కన్నా వారణాసిని మించెను శిరిడిని మరిపించెను పిలవమ్మ ఒక్కసారి మరలను ఊరూరున పల్లె పల్లె తాగునీరు తాగునీరు ఊరూరున పల్లె పల్లె పొంగి పొరలే తాయి గంగ తరంగాలు పొంగి పొరలే తాయి గంగ తరంగాలు విద్యా వైద్యాలయాలు క్రీడలకే కొంగొత్త స్టేడియములు విద్యా వైద్యాలయాలు క్రీడలకే కొంగొత్త స్టేడియములు తరలి వచ్చే వైకుంఠము తనివి తీర చూడమని ఒక్కసారి ఒక్కసారి మరలను రైలు బండి తిరిగను విమానాలు ఎగిరెను రైలు బండి తిరిగెను విమానాలు ఎగిరెను రహదారులు వేసెను రాజమార్గమేర్పడెను రహదారులు వేసెను రాజమార్గమేర్పడెను రవాణా సౌకర్యము దయమున సమకూరెను రవాణా సౌకర్యముదయమున సమకూరెను భక్తి వాసులంత సత్య సాయి దీనుకరిల్లెను ఒక్కసారి మరలను దశలు దాటెను నీచుతుడు దశ దిశలకు ఎదిగిన ఘనుడు ఓం యజుర్మందిరం నివాసుడు యజ్ఞయాగ చతుపోషకుడు భక్తిపురి పరమేశుడు
So that was how the Burakatha Nishrama used to end. And Hari, I think you will agree that even though we have discussed almost for more than 1 hour, I think what we have shared about Mother Ishwarama is only not even 10% of...
We just scratched the surface.
Because, you know, we have not even shared 10% of what we have read, not what her life is.
Yes.
So there is so much to her life, and I think I would request all our listeners to really read about her life. There's a very beautiful book on her by Professor Kasturi Ishwarama, The Chosen Mother. We have also done a cover story on Radio Sai's website, Ishwarama, The Crown of Motherhood. And there are many other plenty of articles on the website. Almost every year on Ishwarama Day, we publish something or the other on her life. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for tuning in and listening to this program. And a special thanks to you, Hari, for joining in.
I must thank you, Vishu, because this is a very special program for me. As I read through, I was looking for those early days of Swami as a child and how I was trying to place myself in his shoes, trying to imagine, you know, this ashram coming up and the mother having all these doubts about me. And
yes,
like, you know, it was a very interesting journey. I must personally thank you for having me over for this program.
I think it is always the same experience. I think you take up any aspect of Swami's life or any aspect of Swami's message. Now when we ruminate on it, you know, the kind of insights that we get and the kind of revelations that we get and what it does to us is, I think, so profound. And I think that's the same experience all the time, not only for us. I think it's the same for all our listeners too. Dear listeners, the time in the studios now is 10:15, and I will have to seek your pardon for continuing this session for so long and leave you now to ruminate on what we have discussed today. Even as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama presented by Balvikas Chiller from Kerala during the Onam celebrations on 27th August 2004. It's entitled Bhakta Sakha Bhagavan. So you will continue to listen to this now. As I take leave, I am Vishu, and with me was Hari. And if you want to download this program from our website, you can do so from Thursday Live Archives. And the most important, please do write and tell us what you feel about this program. Tell us what you would like to hear from us on this slot on Thursday nights, outside, inside and deep inside. You can write, as always, to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much for being with us. And finally, a sweet goodbye and loving salam from the studios of Radio Sai.